Welcome to First Turn, where we play board games for the first time and discuss our immediate reactions. It's like book club, but for board games. I'm Eric, and with me is Kiwi and BP.
Hello.
Hi.
Today we're going to be playing Steam Park, designed by Arliano Buonfino of Dungeon Fighter, which that kind of looks like it's his title, like his title is Dungeon Fighter. Lorenzo Silva of Potion Explosion, Dragon Castle, Railroad Inc., and Lorenzo Tucci Sorrentino, also of Dungeon Fighter, and the art is by Marie Cardot of Dixit. Published by Yellow in the U.S. and Cranio Creations, maybe, in Italy? The description is, as owners of a fantastic steam park, you're to build gigantic coal-powered rides to attract as many visitors as you can. But building attractions won't be enough. You'll also need to manage your employees, invest in advertising in order to attract and please the different types of guests in your park, and above all, keep the dirt that your park produces under strict control. The mechanics are card drafting, dice rolling, memory, and modular board.
Memory.
Yep.
The artwork is a very dark, creepy-looking theme park.
It's creepy-looking.
Really? With the slanted angles and the kind of cloudy look at the top? And
it reminds me
darkness.
Of, like, I don't know, some of those, like, kind of cartoons, like Caroline or whatever, James and the Giant Peach, where it's more kind of, I don't know, like, not mainstream, but I don't know that I would say necessarily.
It evokes a creepy feeling. I would not walk forward down this path into this park. It is going to murder me.
It reminds me of the art in La Petite Prince.
Yes.
So that's the first thing I thought of when I saw it. And then I was like, oh, man. And then like Dixit always reminds me of that, too. Yeah. And then when I started doing the show notes, I was like, oh, well, there's why it reminds me of Dixit, because it's the same artist. She also did Dixit.
Well, a lot of artists did Dixit.
Yeah, I think she was a big one, though.
Yeah, I could see there's that in that aspect to it, which, I don't find creepy just because the background is dark, like all the buildings are lit up. Yeah, they're like not, you know, a Magic Mountain Six Flags kind of shapes to them. They're more kind of organic kind of shapes, but I feel like they look, I don't know, carnival fun.
I get what Eric's saying, though, because like if you take the way the picture is drawn, right, with the crazy roller coasters and the buildings and all that stuff, and you put that in like 80s cartoon style, that is 100% an opening scene to Scooby-Doo. Like that's where the dude is like stealing stuff. Yep. And that's where the monster lives.
Yeah.
I guess we're going to have to disagree on this one.
At a glance, like, and I'm not even like studying the art or anything, just at a glance, I'd be like, not going in there.
Well, apparently I would pull it off the shelf then because it looks intriguing to me.
Oh, I'm intrigued by the whole steam park thing and the fact that it's like steampunk amusement park, which I'll say the picture doesn't really give off that. Nothing steamy really comes.
It reminds me of Dixit, and I would probably pick it up off the shelf to see why there's another game with Dixit-like art.
Even like not the art, I think just the idea of like a... First of all, like Roller Coaster Tycoon, come on.
Sure.
Right? Yeah. Managing an amusement park. And then just the whole steampunk aspect of it is interesting. I'm just saying I'm not walking into that park.
I mean, maybe you'll be saved by some meddlesome kids.
Maybe we're the meddlesome kids.
Oh, that's
very true. Or maybe
we
own the park. We're being stopped by the meddlesome kids.
Yeah, maybe we're the creepy people that are trying to get the insurance money, so we're dressed as a local legend monster thing.
This has really gone off the rails.
All right, BP, give us that Scooby-Doo history.
Okay, yeah.
Or scary theme park history, one or the other. That's what I'm looking for.
Yeah. Maybe kind of scary. I went with amusement parks in general and their history. And the first thing that came to my mind, of course, was the 19th century when entertainment for the masses actually became a thing, right? So the 19th century, along with industrialization, you start to see the rise of, you know, mass politics, mass publication, you know, mass education. But along with industrialization, and you start to have the separation of work life and home life for the lower classes, in a physical space with the limited time that workers had available to them. Of course, they wanted to go somewhere, you know, to spend their leisure time. and you started to have new technology such as like streetcars and trains, right, that were becoming much more prevalent and much more affordable for the working class. And so like Coney Island is one of the early starts. And that's where I say, well, maybe kind of creepy, because like some of the early pictures, you know, like you'll see kind of some of the circus animal type features. Obviously with Coney Island, it's along the Atlantic seaboard. So people were very, they would go out there, you know, also to swim and get into the water. But there were also like Nickelodeons were very kind of also popular at the time, and new technology. So being able to view, you know, film, usually Wait, silent films.
What was popular?
Nickelodeons?
I didn't know that was a term.
Not the TV channel.
Not I know. The TV
I
know, channel.
I, what does that term mean? I'd never heard it used outside of like the TV channel.
They are usually like standalone little viewing boxes for film. And so usually you would look into the box, like putting your head down to look into the film box. Obviously, the box would be built up a little bit to help, right, screen outdoor lights and things like that. But they were usually made for individuals, right? Or, I mean, if you could cram two small child heads in it, I suppose there's your delinquent children. yeah.
Just cramming children.
Just cramming children's heads into the Nickelodeons.
It's that creepy amusement park.
Right. I mean, it's not like... Oh, okay. Anyway, what's funny though is, by the way, when you start to type in Nickelodeon, one of the options that does come up is Nickelodeon amusement parks. If you were,
yeah, according to Google, a historical definition is a movie theater with an admission fee of one nickel.
Yeah, so like the 19th century ones, I think, are more what we think of when we think of amusement parks. I mean, having different types of parks designed for amusement can be dated back, you know, to ancient times, but those were usually designed for elites. It's really this 19th century with industrialization that you start to see the formation of, you know, basically like your early versions of Six Flags. And there'd be more, I don't like the Boardwalk and Santa Cruz, right? Like in California is kind of that same version. Various boardwalks up and down the East Coast kind of have those. If you've ever seen like images from the Chicago's World Fair for the celebration of Columbus's, right, 400 years of exploration. That was like one of the first Ferris wheels. So it all of this is very 19th century with that industrialization, which of course fits the whole steampunk idea and world as well, because it is usually based out of 19th century Victorian culture. So there you go.
So ever since you brought up Nickelodeon, all I want to do is watch episodes of Guts and Legend of the Hidden Temple. they were great shows. Okay, anyway, so this is not either of those games. Would you guys like to know how to play?
I mean, I'm hoping it has something to do with, you know, good old, I mean, like, things from these 19th century working class, like, right, try to beat the strong arm circus style things. But yeah, tell us.
That's mostly robots.
Oh, okay. Wow.
All right. So a game of steampark is going to be made up of six turns, and each turn is four phases. At the end of the last phase of the last turn, the game is over, and the player with the most money is the winner. You're going to gain money for every visitor in your park at the end of each turn and for the bonus cards you play. And at the end of the game, you are going to lose money because you have to pay for someone to come in and clean the dirt in your park. So during the roll phase, everyone is going to simultaneously roll their six dice and select the dice they want to keep and place them on their pig board.
Are we back to three little pigs?
No, but they are. It is a board with mechanical pigs on it. So if you choose to re-roll dice that you don't put on your pig board, you have to re-roll all the dice. Once you've placed all your dice on your pig board, you have to reach into the middle of the table and grab the turn order token that is the lowest currently on the board. If the last player token is the only one remaining, the player without a turn order token is allowed only three more rerolls before they have to stop. So if you're the last one, you can't just keep rerolling until you get what you want. If a die is accidentally flipped or inadvertently changed while placing it on your pig board, it cannot be changed back to its original side, and you just end up with whatever you accidentally flipped it to. Mm. Once it's on the pig board, it cannot be changed. So that's the roll phase. In the dirt phase, each of the dice is going to have a little dirt. Some of the sides have a little dirt icon. So for every dirt icon, you are going to take one dirt token. And then for every visitor in your park, you're going to take one dirt token. And then based on the turn order token that you took, you'll either remove dirt or take away dirt. So that's the dirt phase. In the action phase, we're going to use our dice to execute actions. So for the crossed wrench and hammer icon, that's going to let you build rides. And there's different size rides that correspond to the squares on your map. So you have 1, 2, and 3, and they will cost you 1, 2, and 3 dice with the wrench and hammer icon. You cannot build more than one ride of the same size in the same turn. And when they're constructed, rides cannot touch stands. So there's like a little stand, you know, for selling t-shirts and hats and all that garbage. Mm-hmm. And they cannot touch rides of a different color. And this goes both orthogonally and diagonally. If you already have that color on the board, your new ride must touch that old ride orthogonally. So if you have a blue ride on the map, your new blue ride has to touch your other blue ride. But it cannot touch any other color or another stand. Circus tents allow you to build stands, so each stand costs you one die. You can't purchase the same type of stand in the same turn, and the stands provide you different special abilities, and they cannot touch another ride or another stand diagonally or orthogonally. And there's 5 different stands. So you have a security stand, which lets you put a visitor back, an info point, which lets you put visitors of a different color on a ride, a casino, which lets you change one die on your pig board to a side of your choice, a toilet, which gives you a single broom die, can be counted as a double broom die, and a promotion, which lets a single visitor die count as a double visitor die. Then you have the standing person icon, and that for each visitor, you're going to take one color of your choice and place it in the bag. So this is where the memory part comes up, because inside the bag when we start the game is a visitor of each color. So then I use 2 standing persons and I pick 2 blue visitors and I put them in the bag. Then I'm going to shuffle up the bag and I'm going to draw 2 blue visitors, or I'm going to draw 2 visitors. They could be any color. If I have a ride of that color and I have an open space on that ride, I can put the visitor on that ride, and that visitor is going to stay in my park for the rest of the time. If it's not, I have to put that visitor back. But the bag is always going to end up with 6 meeples in the bag. So the memory part is remembering what color meeples are in the bag to decide what color you want to put in to draw out. Brooms, I'll let you clean up 2 dirt, and the shovel or mound, for each one you, for each die with the shovel and mound icon, you can play a bonus card, and bonus cards allow you to earn money that you get to take immediately instead of waiting until the end of the turn. And then finally, any symbol can be spent to purchase an additional ground tile. So we're going to start with a big tile that's 4x4, and then you can purchase additional tiles that are 2x2. And the only rule is that you must have 2 squares adjacent to the main board and or another ground tile. So basically, you're going to be able to make your lands bigger, because the big thing is stands can't touch other stands. Once all players have taken their actions, the rounds go into the income phase. So that was the build phase. Last phase is the income phase. Each visitor in your park gains you 3 denarii, which is money. If you have less than 3 bonus cards, you're going to draw 2 cards, choose one and discard the other. And you're going to repeat that until you're back up to 3 cards. After the 6th round is finished, players will pay a fee to have all their dirt in their park cleaned. If you have 30 or more dirt, you automatically lose. So, for example, if you have 20 to 24 dirt, you will have to pay 45 money at the end of the game. And then once everybody is paid to remove any dirt in their park, whoever has the most is the winner. That's it. It's the whole thing. I'm not repeating anything.
Wow. That was a lot. I say, let's play.
We just finished a game of Steam Park. To recap, BP had 71 points or money or denarii. Kiwi had 94 and I won with 113. So strategy?
Yeah, what strategy?
Yeah, your winning strategy there, mister.
I focused on two colors, pink and blue, based kind of on blue. I took just to deny BP blue, and pink. Mm-hmm. I got a card that said, you want pink people, so I just chose that.
Yeah, and then blue, taking blue turned out not to screw over BP, but to screw over me.
Yes, so it worked out. And then I had a card that said I wanted a bunch of the little tent things, so I kind of just bought a bunch of those to start with. And then I didn't worry about dirt until the last round, which luckily kind of worked out. Yeah, I don't know. What was your strategy?
I started out trying to get blue rides, and then that didn't work out for me because somebody took them all because I had a card that was blue spaces. Yep. And then I tried to take a little bit of all the colors so that when I pulled people from the bag, I would have a place to put them. And then I think I was the slowest to get stands. I think you and BP grabbed them before.
To be fair, I confused the symbols in the first round, so I thought I was building rides, and it was all stands. That's why I went the stand route. But I think it was smart. Like, I think those were good to have early in the game because they helped me.
They definitely gave you some good bonuses.
They helped me get people early, which I think is how I kind of got more points overall. Was I had people in the first couple rounds, and you guys didn't.
Yeah, it definitely pays off because they count for a lot of money. I mean, one person in the first round will give you 18 points.
I had one in the first round, and you guys didn't have any till round two or three. BP?
I at first just went kind of for, the first round, you're just kind of randomly like, I don't know. But I figured since it was a theme park thing, I would go for rides. And you guys all thought I wanted the blue rides, but I actually wanted the goth haunted house, which I then got all three. So I was quite proud of myself. Other than that, I just wanted to like control my dirt. And then I kept forgetting about like the different symbols. So I just think like throughout it, I was like, oh, I should have really like gotten one of those or one of those. And I forgot to use my casino probably more effectively. I don't know. I mean, I think in my strategy, there's a lot. Oh yeah, I should have, could have.
Yeah. But I was the same way.
I mean, when I listened to you guys like early on, I was like, oh, yeah, you need space. But obviously kept running out of space because that last round I was just swearing at Kiwi the whole time because he read the rules and he wouldn't let me build stuff in that space for it.
That jerk.
It was me who wouldn't let you build stuff.
Right. Exactly.
All right. So the theme, what do we think of the theme? BP?
I mean, I thought it was cute. Whole building a theme park. I definitely feel like I don't know like about the restrictions necessarily and how that like came into play. I mean, I guess technically you'd have restrictions on where you could build things too. So I guess it all does kind of work out. But I liked it. I feel like there was like a lot of variety as far as like different types of aspects that you were going for. Like, I feel like I was building a theme park. I mean, it was like one of those like, who is that director? Is it like Tom Robbins or something, who did like Nightmare Before Christmas?
Tim Burton.
Yeah, Tim Burton.
Yeah. It's like a Tim Burton-esque theme park.
Let me ask you this. Did anything in the game make you think of a steam park over a theme park other than the images on the pieces?
The pounds of coal. Yeah, no, I guess. Yeah, there's not like build this type of machinery. Yeah, no, I guess the steam park. So it could be like
theme park, I think. I mean, I'm not saying it's bad. Like, it definitely kind of played like, oh, you're building a park, you're attracting visitors. Like, I think all that worked. Other than the art styling, I think the steampunk kind of pieces didn't come in.
Yeah. So the idea with the visitors is they are robots. You are building this theme park for Roboburg for their annual fair.
Well, then why are they so dirty?
Well, because robots,
Leak oil everywhere.
How would I know that about robots? Apparently, I should know more.
I mean, yeah, like I'm saying other than like a fluff piece written, sitting down and playing the game, you wouldn't have known these were robots you were attracting or anything. So,
yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say like the theme could have been used more. I feel like theme park would have worked. This is one of those games where I feel like you could probably find a lot of other themes to fit it.
Yep.
It was still fun. You could have put other themes on it. I think the theme closely ties with the art.
So speaking of the art, BP, what'd you think?
That it was fantastic. I mean, the Tim Burton-esque, the components are also really nice.
So I'm just going to say Tim Burton was known for making what?
Nightmare Before Christmas, Edward Scissorhands.
You would say these movies are kind of creepy?
No. I don't think they're creepy.
You can't tell me that Nightmare Before Christmas doesn't have creepy aspects to it. You cannot say that. Yeah.
Hey.
Or how about Beetlejuice?
Yeah, that good movie.
Sweeney Todd, Frankenweenie.
Okay, Sweeney Todd may have been a little creepy.
All right. Anyway, back to the art. Kiwi, what'd you think of the art?
No, I really enjoy the art. It, like I said before, reminds me of Dixit, which I really enjoy that art. It's the same artist. Reminds me of Le Petit Prince, which is a great kids book. I just think all around the art.
And not creepy.
Correct. That is the one creepy thing we have named on this entire episode. But I think the art and the theme are the things that are most closely tied.
I like the art. I like that since they're stand-up kind of pieces, you're also kind of you're looking at them the whole time as opposed to like just art on a card that you may or may not pay attention to. Like they're kind of right in front of your face. So mechanics, Kiwi.
I really liked the different mechanics. The mechanics in the game are all very different, right? The dice rolling, which there's a little bit of dexterity in it because you've got to go for the first player tokens. And then you go into the build phase, which kind of has almost a action selection, you know, action point type vibe to it. And then you've also got a little bit of hand management. I feel like all the mechanics are all very different, but they worked well together.
I'm going to disagree a little. I like the dice thing. That's kind of a fun mechanic to me, the race to get your dice. The spatial puzzle piece of it, I don't know. Like it didn't seem like
it got annoying after a while.
Yeah, like it didn't seem like a super fun part of the game. It was mostly an annoyance.
So how is that any different than from like Galaxy Trucker, which you're racing to get tiles and place them to build your ship, and the ship has specific what can be connected to what?
Because that's more of a puzzle to figure out. Like, I'm not saying the race part has anything to do with the space. As just a solo spatial puzzle, like if you compare this to, you know, any of the other like Tetris games. Like Dinosaur Park.
Well, Dinosaur Island, I think is what she's talking about. Unless you're talking about the rolling right, BP.
I mean, I feel like Dinosaur Island doesn't have quite the spatial thing, but Dinosaur Park, isn't that the rolling right one?
Most rolling rights are spatial puzzles. Yeah. So look at any roll and write or, you know, any Tetris game, like you're kind of more solving the puzzle. I didn't really think because you can add the pieces. I didn't really think about it. I was like, OK, I just add a piece and then build my thing, add a piece, build a thing.
But that's where the action point selection comes in, because you have to figure out when you're going to do that and what type of dice you're going to use. Like you have to give up some other action.
Why bother making it a spatial puzzle? Why don't you just say it costs 2 action to build something?
Well, because you don't actually have action points. The dice are your action points. So you'd have to say use 2 dice to build it. And at that point, I don't think somebody would do it.
Well, yeah, but you would never build anything.
Too much. You'd pay 33% of your dice to build one additional space.
Well, yeah, you're not. But like, why get rid of the whole space thing and you're just putting them on there's no puzzle pieces. You just put them out and it costs more to build them. Like, I'm just saying, I don't know that the puzzle I really thought like, oh, this is a fun puzzle to place my stuff. I just didn't pay attention to it. It's like, why bother having this whole grid layout and orthogonal diagonal placement rules and all that crap when you could just say, I don't know, build it.
So you're talking like more tiny town style.
No, get rid of the whole grid thing.
I don't know.
I don't know. I don't think the spatial puzzle fit with the rest of the game, basically. I didn't think it was a fun part of it that I was like trying to solve the puzzle.
Now, is that a case of the rules were confusing or you sometimes don't care for spatial puzzles?
No, because I always like them. I don't think the rules are confusing. I just don't think it's a good mechanic for this game. I don't know. BP, what did you think? Did you enjoy the puzzle piece of it?
I think the swearing in the last round.
Yeah, it's more an annoyance than a fun part of the game.
Yeah, I mean, I can see both sides of your argument, but maybe there's a different way of working it. I think Eric is trying to think more like with Tiny Town. There was like, you have this limited space. So you have to think very carefully about how all the pieces fit together. With this one, you didn't necessarily like, I kind of put things in corners just because I knew they couldn't touch. But then I would still run out of space and have to add more space. And so I would just have to give up, you know, a dice to build more space. I mean, right. I was still able in the end to continue to build the things I wanted to build, but I didn't have to from the get go think about, okay, I only want this types of games or rides over here. I can try to organize my stands in this one certain section. Like,
yeah, it wasn't like a fun puzzle to solve. It was just in this case, like I felt like early on, we thought there's a lot to this game. If you were to figure out how to simplify that building section, you could really simplify the game down and focus on kind of the dice rolling action management part of the game.
We'll agree to disagree. I like that.
Oh, I don't think any of us didn't not like it, but anyway.
Yeah, I'm not saying I didn't like it. I, as a developer for this game, I would have explored alternative mechanics. So the rules, BP.
Like I think you had just stated, at first it seemed like there was a lot going on. It was definitely one of those ones that we had to play through. I think once you knew what those rules were, you know, by round five and six, I think, yeah, we.
Yeah, I think kind of it's more of maybe a design aspect of it, but we struggled with the symbols on the dice and we struggled with the tents and remembering what they did. So I feel like those maybe could have just been presented differently, or
maybe instead of wrenches and hammers, they could have been like pictures of rides.
Yeah.
And then the tents would have made sense to be stands at that point. Because I feel like the coal and the shovel could have been just like a dollar symbol.
Yeah, I don't know. It just seemed like a struggle point for us. And then like all the different tents, remembering what they all did was a little difficult, I feel like.
Yeah, I think a good player aid probably would have been helpful. Yeah. Felt like the rule book was laid out well. This one, kind of like Galaxy Trucker, I think Eric brought it up when we started playing, has like funny little tidbits like all throughout it. In all their examples, there's a player named Ivan who always ends up last. So then when it talks about the casino, the example starts with sick of always being the last player. Ivan rushed through the roll phase. But when the action phase comes, he realized he screwed up badly. So even though, no, good, poor Ivan got to go first, but he screwed himself. So, and there's like the examples all throughout are just, you know, full of stuff like that. And so it was fun. It made reading the examples entertaining, and the rule book is not super confusing. There were a couple points where like word usage seemed odd. And I have a feeling that is because of Italian to English translation.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Because there's one where it says like, either take a bonus or a malice. Just like a malice. You mean like a penalty?
Take a malice. All right, player interaction. I'd say I had some pretty indirect player action. I could grab, you know, pieces that I thought other people might take. I don't think that played a big part in it. I kind of got lucky and messed up Kiwi, but that wasn't really that intentional. And you can kind of watch like what kind of, like, I know, I think Kiwi played a little more off of our boards where he's watching the types of visitors we put in the bag and playing rides accordingly. Right.
Yeah. I decided that it was dumb to try and remember what was in the bag. And I just looked at the meeple pile and then, you know, okay, so there's a bunch of black in there. I know BP has all the black rides. Right. So you know, I'm not going to add black. And I knew that you had added a bunch of blue, but I only knew that because, you know, there's only one blue meeple left.
Yep. Yeah. So I wouldn't say there's a lot of direct player interaction, but I think we're at least a little engaged with each other, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, we were definitely talking. And I think some of that was like rules discussions and like things to do.
A lot of like quippy things about toilets and stuff. It reminded me of Cat Lady, where you just sort of have these funny comments that are game related, but not, you know.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
So it's a decent amount of interaction. All right. Would you play it again? BP.
Sure. Because I like Tim Burton and great art.
And his creepy movies.
He's not creepy. His non-creepy movies.
He did Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. He did the remake of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Yeah, so
both of those are creepy.
Kiwi, would you play it again?
Yeah, I'd play it again.
Because of Tim Burton?
No, absolutely not. I liked the puzzle. I liked all the mechanics, the way they work together. There are some other stuff. I enjoyed the take two bonus cards and put one back and then draw again to get you back up to three. I thought that was a little different. You know, a lot of games do that, but they don't do like, you know, a normal game might be, hey, if you need two, draw four and get rid of two. But this one is you do it one at a time. Yeah,
I like that you're encouraged to like use them as you go instead of waiting until they're complete. Because a lot of them are like, here's your bonuses, tiers. But of course, you're going to wait till you complete it or you're not going to use it at all. But like this one, I use some of them just because like, well, I'm not doing better than three colon around. So,
yeah. Plus, you like, you know, you want to play them because that, you know, it helps you cycle more bonus cards into your deck. So you might get, like you told BP during the game, like you might, you know, you'll play it. Maybe you don't get a lot of money now, but you get a card that you can get a lot of money for later.
Right. Like, you know, you want to have all the goth kids and suddenly she's got $10, right?
Yeah. Worth of goth kids. She's got her, one of those stands is a Hot Topic.
So her goth kids, her goth kids at the Hot Topic riding the haunted house ride.
Yep.
Not creepy at all.
Yeah, definitely not creepy. And now we just lost all our goth listeners.
Or they're just now sudden fans of me.
Yeah, I would play it again. It's fun. I really like the dice
mm-hmm.
panic is what I'm going to call that mechanic.
Okay.
Yeah.
Where you're trying to pick them. The action selection, you know, all because I think the puzzle could be a different or better mechanic doesn't mean I think it's bad. So,
yeah, I think the cardboard ride components are also fun too.
All right. So that is Steam Park.
So if you have any other recommendations or comments about Tim Burton and his movies or visual puzzle games, games with good art that you would like to share with us or recommendations on games to play, please feel free to email us at firstturntabletop@gmail.com or leave us a message either via Twitter or a direct message on Instagram or one of our comments on a picture. And the podcasting camel says, don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe on your favorite podcatchers. Don't you just see a little Tim Burton camel coming out and saying, yay, play more games, play more games.
A creepy Tim Burton camel.
I know. How would you not want a toilet? Dirt. When does my toilet come into play?
When you use your brooms.
Dude, toilets are so worth it. I mean, like, in reality.
I'm a big fan of toilets myself.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of toilets. Love them.
Flushing toilets especially. But I just bought more land.
I know, but the land only gave you enough room for one.
Oh, that's such bullshit, Kiwi.
All right. Three.
Oh, sorry.
We're going. I forgot what the symbols mean. I forgot what all the symbols mean.